The Toronto Regional Real Estate Board is a not-for-profit corporation founded in 1920 by a small group of real estate practitioners. Today, as Canada's largest real estate board, TREB is the collective voice for both its commercial and residential realtor members and operates under the direction of an elected voluntary board of 14 directors. TREB serves more than 68,000 licensed real estate brokers and salespeople in and around the Greater Toronto area. I'm Ian Grant. Welcome to Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. And we have lots to cover this hour, including the home mortgage stress test and whether or not it might have run its course, how government policy is impacting housing supply, taxation on housing, development charges, and if you don't know what a buyer representation agreement is and how it can really help you, the buyer, then you soon will. All this and more. And as usual, it is great to have Kevin Krieger, president of the Toronto Regional Real Estate Board, joining me for this hour. Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Kevin, we often discuss the many reasons for a buyer or seller to work with a TREB member. Now, most are aware that they'll be asked to sign a listing agreement. There is another document, though, that realtors ask their home buying clients to sign. And this one, it really does work in favor of the buyers. Can you talk a little bit about the buyer representation agreement?
The buyer representation agreement, or BRA for short, is effectively for a buyer what a listing agreement is for a seller. It creates an agency relationship between the client and the brokerage they're working with. In a client relationship, the brokerage and the agent serving them owes them the highest level of fiduciary responsibility. So it is a true client relationship. As part of that process, the buyer representative working for the brokerage has to provide disclosure to their purchaser of anything the buyer agent knows or should know about the property. So anything that would affect one's decision to purchase. In addition to that, it creates a business relationship between the two parties. So in developing your search criteria, ensuring that you see all available homes that would match that criteria, and also providing true advice and guidance. The reality is, without an agency relationship where there's a client level of service, the agent certainly has responsibilities to act ethically, but the buyer representation agreement takes the level of responsibility to a higher level and ultimately ensures that the client is getting the best level of advice and guidance throughout the process.
Kevin, listeners have certainly heard about the mortgage stress test out there, but it really isn't until you're about to buy that property that the ramifications of it really do hit home. Can you take a second and explain just what the test is and how it works?
Definitely. The test was originally established to create a buffer between what the market was offering in terms of available rates to clients looking for mortgages and the actual rates that they were paying, because we were obviously in a very low interest rate environment. So effectively, people are qualifying at 2% above the best negotiated rate. In the current market, that's somewhere in the likely 7% range and has fluctuated up as high as 8%. The idea effectively was when rates were below 2%, you were qualifying at, you know, just below 4%. And the idea was interest rates obviously were going to increase, and the government sought to create further stability and ensure that, you know, rate increases would be less impactful long term. We certainly believe that the stress test has achieved that goal in that, you know, people who have purchased since 2018, whether they've been buying in a low interest rate environment or not, have certainly qualified at a substantially higher rate than what they're paying.
Kevin, I've asked you before about how the mortgage test can actually hurt housing affordability for both new and existing homeowners. And I've told you in the past about a friend who isn't happy with his current arrangement, but he's actually scared to shop his mortgage around because he's just not sure what those ramifications may be. So I guess the real question here to you would be, is the mortgage stress test really still applicable? And is it possibly now causing, I guess, more harm than good?
I think the stress test, when it was initially introduced, was introduced to deal with a potential problem in the market, which was an adjustment to higher interest rates. Certainly having it over the last number of years has you know, soften the change that we've seen, which has been substantial. When you look at people who are in an existing mortgage product who are now coming up for renewal, one of the challenges is if they renew with their existing lender, there's essentially no additional qualification required. And if they go to a new lender to shop for the best possible rate, the stress test applies, and it's obviously a much more involved process. So one concern, obviously, is that the existence of the stress test discourages people from ultimately shopping for the best possible rate. And in addition to that, really discourages financial institutions from offering incentivized rates to existing clients who are looking to renew, because they understand all of the associated roadblocks with that particular client trying to switch to a new lender. Over and above that, looking at the stress test now, in an environment where interest rates are much higher for those looking to get into the market, it really creates an arbitrary barrier that isn't sort of tied to any market fundamentals, certainly isn't tied to expectations of where rates will be a year or 2 years from now. So it is creating a roadblock for many. And what people often now are doing with higher rates plus the stress test is essentially looking at different types of housing. So they're buying larger condos as opposed to going from a smaller condo to a smaller house. And certainly there are a number of people who are sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what the overall market does. But it's certainly our opinion that the stress test served its policy objectives and really needs to be revisited by the government at this point.
I'm always interested to talk to you about your interactions with realtors. Are you noticing, and is the feedback you're getting, that things are slowly returning to some semblance of normal out there? Because it certainly feels a lot more normal.
Well, I think one of the biggest factors when there's any substantive change in interest rates or overall market factors is a sense of the unknown. And certainly for a lot of our clients, there was sort of a step back from actively looking at property and really trying to understand, you know, what the longer term effect was going to be, how these changes in affordability affected them. And certainly for a lot of realtors, we've seen an overall slowdown really in decision making. So we are certainly seeing people who, for the last couple of months, have been sitting on the sidelines now reaching out and re-engaging in their home search. So we'll see what that looks like in terms of overall market statistics over the next couple of months. But certainly an uptick in overall activity, certainly an uptick in inquiries and conversations that we're having with prospective clients. So we'll see what that plays out over the next couple of months in terms of overall sales and market activity.
In so many areas, I notice, you know, that there is that enthusiasm coming back, that sense of hope. I'm just curious, through the years, is September, because I know in so many other areas in businesses, it is September normally one of those areas in real estate where people start to kind of get excited about the whole thing again after having the summer off?
Well, definitely. And I think we've seen a bit of a difference this past year in that people were traveling to a larger degree than we've obviously seen the last number of years. And I think now as people come back and sort of get settled for, you know, what is traditionally the school year, certainly, it generally is a much more active period in the market and is a period where, you know, people sort of want to get things done in advance of the holiday season approaching, winter approaching. So generally, the fall is quite strong.
Let me ask you a little bit about government policy and just how that is impacting housing supply out there. Treb has said municipal government policies and programs should help create more affordable ownership and rental housing options. Things like ending exclusionary zoning to allow for more multiplex housing, such as duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes even, in the neighbors that are currently zoned for single-family homes. Also, home energy rating and disclosure programs. Treb has suggested those should be voluntary. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Certainly. One of the major concerns that we've expressed for quite some time, and you and I have talked about at length, is really the shortage of housing. And when you look at where opportunities exist to bring housing to market fairly quickly, it's gentle intensification in existing neighborhoods. So we have tons of areas throughout the city where there's great transit accessibility, great transit infrastructure, a strong retail sector. And within a number of those communities, you have single family homes that are in many cases being underutilized. When you look at the process of converting a single family home to a duplex or getting more complicated into a triplex or even more complicated into a fourplex, there are substantial limitations and there are also government imposed charges and fees as part of that process. So in cutting red tape and providing more optionality for denser housing types that still don't really impact the overall look and feel of a neighborhood is certainly one way that an average homeowner could assist in bringing housing units to market. It may allow those who are getting older and have stayed in a home that was great to raise a family in, but now is too large for them, to potentially look at ways to convert it so they could stay in their existing neighborhood. And that certainly provides potentially a lot of individual housing units across neighborhoods throughout the city and doesn't rely exclusively on the development committee, development community to build larger towers in select pockets throughout the city.
My guest this hour, TREB President Kevin Krieger. Now, whether you're buying or selling a home, undoubtedly, that decision is going to lead to one of the largest financial transactions you're ever going to make. Get the advantage you need with a Toronto Regional Real Estate Board member. For your real estate market facts and to search GTA listings updated in real time, visit treb.ca, TREB.ca. I'm Ian Grant, and this is Ask the Expert on News Talk 1010 Toronto. We are back, and this is Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, and I'm joined this hour by TREB President Kevin Krieger. We are talking real estate this hour, Kevin, and one of the areas that I also wanted to ask you about was home energy rating and disclosure programs, and should they be voluntary? And it's a really interesting discussion point. I'm wondering if you can expand on it.
Most definitely. The most significant cause of housing affordability challenges in Toronto really is the supply of homes for sale is vastly outstripped by demand. So with that in mind, it's important to understand that any interference in the housing transaction process that could potentially add delays or discourage the listing of a home for sale will exacerbate an already challenging housing affordability climate. When you look at a mandatory home energy audit program, this sort of creates a couple of potential issues. So waiting for an energy advisor to be available to conduct an energy audit could cause significant delays, especially given the high number of housing transactions in Toronto, thereby delaying the availability of a home for sale. In addition, the added cost and bureaucratic process of a mandatory program could discourage some people from listing their home for sale at all. When you look at options to achieve greater energy efficiency and greater ratings, we've seen a number of voluntary programs in the past that have focused on incentivizing homeowners in upgrading things like windows or insulation. And that's certainly something that we support wholeheartedly.
Another area, Kevin, that TREB is pushing for is reducing red tape and improving governance.
We've seen a very long development cycle in the city of Toronto specifically. And the longer the process, the longer it takes to bring housing to market. So there are a number of ways to reduce red tape and improve the overall process. One that we talked about was eliminating exclusionary zoning. So looking at potentials to update what can be built in certain pockets of the city, what that process looks like, and how it can move through in a cohesive way, taking the bureaucracy out of the process to ensure that, you know, developments that are within the characteristic of a neighborhood move through the process much faster.
When we were talking before about energy ratings, I was wondering, is there a different plan in place if I tell the realtor that I'm buying a home to live in, or if I'm buying a home because I want the land, I'm going to raise the house or completely change the inside? When I was thinking about the energy rating and things like that, if I'm buying that house to just rip it apart, any kind of information like that, really, it would be useless.
Well, and that's the other thing that sort of a mandatory program doesn't really address. When you look at the age of housing in Toronto, you look at the condition of individual homes, you know, certainly people are going in with an understanding that there are areas to upgrade. In some cases, they're looking at properties for a new build or a substantial renovation, in which case the home energy rating really is irrelevant to the transaction. So again, when you bring in sort of one size fits all mandatory programs, there are a lot of unintended consequences. In many cases, there are a lot of additional costs that don't really achieve the end goal of increasing efficiency in any real way.
Reminds me of a property that we sold downtown. It was left in a will, and honestly, I don't think the place had been touched since probably 1963. It still had the knob and tubing wires. The furnace was just scary. You already said it very well, but in a city where I can go two streets across and find a home that's, you know, 150 years old or one that was just built 4 years ago, the one size fits all absolutely doesn't make sense.
Over and above that, when you look at the real estate transaction, people are transacting for different reasons. So in the case of an estate, for example, where a home mightn't have been touched for the last 40 years, clearly anyone coming to look at that home, generally buying in as is, where is condition, is intending to do a substantial renovation or in some cases a completely new build. Is it reasonable to delay the settling of that estate for the purpose of completing home energy audit that really has no value to the person purchasing the property based on their overall intent for the property? I think the resounding answer is no. In terms of programs that are effective, we've certainly seen a number of instances where incentivizing a homeowner to make improvements provides value to that homeowner. And it also provides value to government who are looking to ultimately address concerns around climate change. And generally, the incentive type programs work much more effectively than those that are mandated that don't necessarily bring value to the consumer.
You know, we talk about the value of a realtor, and we've certainly touched in the past about just how valuable a local realtor is, someone who ideally is a part of the community that you're looking for. And, you know, when it comes to the areas that we're discussing, a local realtor is probably a little more likely to know that, you know, this street just had its drains changed, or this street has had a ton of construction on it, or one of the properties jumps to mind. The realtor just mentioned casually that we should be aware that the area that the house, and it was in a very old area, but because the wires were above ground, they said, you know, you just be aware that for some reason the power in this neighborhood is up and down like crazy. So know that going in, by a generator or deal with it. But it's that kind of hyper-local knowledge that is just incredibly valuable.
Well, certainly realtors bring a lot of experience to each and every transaction they're involved in. And knowing the housing types, certainly understanding what opportunities exist for addressing potential issues in a home, looking at opportunities to renovate to suit, and also providing options that expand your criteria while still meeting your needs. I think being in the business of real estate and, you know, working very actively provides an incredible resource to a consumer who may transact only a handful of times in their entire lifetime.
We talked earlier about multiplexes and duplexes and triplexes. Another area where the realtor really helped us out was I went on to treb.ca. I was looking at properties, and what the realtor taught me to do was basically thinking outside the box. You know, if I'm looking for three bedrooms, I'm not necessarily going to check three bedrooms because there may be an area within the house that another bedroom could be added or whatever. And it got to the point where I stopped looking on the site and just went with my realtor and the properties that they were suggesting because, I mean, as we've said before, they're doing this day in and day out. With me, it's, you know, once, twice a year at best.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And that's where when you engage with a professional and they're representing your interests, they get to know you on a very individual level. That's where their expertise really shines because they can bring forward, you know, in many cases, years of experience and, you know, hundreds or potentially thousands of homes viewed to look at obviously your core criteria and see how that can be expanded to position you at the best possible place in the market.
Just as we head into a break, another example that I've mentioned before, I know that, is we wanted to find a property that was beside the school. And I can remember the realtor taking us to see the property. We drove past the school and we kept driving. And I said to my wife at the time, you know, it doesn't feel like it's close to the school. When we got to the property, we mentioned it to the realtor. He took us to the backyard. There was a gate in the backyard open to the playing ground on the school on the other side of the fence. That's what knowing the neighborhood can provide. I want to take a break and we'll come back, talk about more. Also want to talk about affordability and availability. My guest this hour, TREB President Kevin Krieger. Now, whether you're buying or selling a home, undoubtedly, that decision is going to lead to one of the largest financial transactions you're ever going to make. TREB members are trusted professionals that have the state-of-the-art tools, skills, and experience to guide you through the process from start to finish. TREB members, professionals, connecting people, property, and communities. As the collective voice for both its commercial and residential realtor members, get the advantage you need with a Toronto Regional Real Estate Board member. For your real estate market facts and to search GTA listings updated in real time, visit treb.ca, TREB.ca. I'm Ian Grant, and this is Ask the Expert on News Talk 1010 Toronto. We are back, and this is Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, and I'm joined this hour by Kevin Krieger, who is president of the Toronto Regional Real Estate Board. And Kevin, for as long as we've been doing these shows, affordability and availability have been the driving focus of our discussions. Can you talk a little bit about government charges and taxes out there that can affect that affordability?
Well, the City of Toronto specifically is unique in the province of Ontario, as it's the only municipality that charges an additional land transfer tax. So for a buyer purchasing a home priced at $2 million in Toronto, they're paying $36,475 in municipal land transfer tax to the city and an additional $36,475 in provincial land transfer tax. Yeah. So that's a total of almost $73,000 in upfront taxes that don't factor into down payments and don't factor into mortgage demands. So that's obviously a huge cost to a purchaser. When you look at the total cost of things like HST, for example, on new build construction, there's a lot of additional charges and fees that equate to huge dollars. You know, development charges for new properties, for example, in the City of Toronto, recently were increased by 46%, bringing the average cost of all government charges and fees to an astounding $350,000 for every new detached house and over $180,000 for a new condominium. So, you know, we certainly recognize that the city needs to fund its operations. And the city did provide an exemption for development charges for up to three additional units on single lots, which certainly will encourage more missing middle multiplex housing. But that exemption alone is not enough. These charges equate to huge dollars and in some cases, nearly a quarter of the cost of a property.
Kevin, the City of Toronto again raising the specter of asking the province for permission to implement speculation taxes on the sale of non-principal residences. Now, as you're aware, this would be on top of existing federal cap gains tax on such sales. Can you talk a little bit about some of the unintended consequences that this tax is going to present? And I'm really shocked that with an election only a couple of weeks, I'm kind of surprised they're even floating this idea right now.
Tax as it relates to real estate and fees as it relates to real estate seems to be a continual conversation at the municipal level. You know, looking at the speculation tax, it again is a demand focus suppressing policy. That's sort of where government up until recently has focused almost exclusively. So we've seen a number of sort of punitive taxes that have been proposed. We've seen things like the foreign buyer tax, which a number of years later has had virtually no effect on the market overall. You know, the speculation tax was introduced in 1974 and, you know, talk about negative ripple effects. There were a ton. So governments really need to focus on increasing the supply of housing for both sale and rent. And one of the issues specifically with the speculation tax when you look at new housing units being constructed in the city, there's obviously a requirement for pre-construction sales in order for a developer to get financing. In many cases, it is investors that are putting up the money for their deposits, purchasing those properties pre-construction, often with a long lead time before completion. And many of those units will resell at the point of completion when they're an actual housing unit that someone can move into. Many more are retained as rental properties. You know, there has not been a huge amount of purpose-built rental construction for decades. And while the government focuses on sort of singular items within the housing spectrum, so now the focus is on ownership housing. So they look at sort of policies that will suppress demand with the goal of increasing affordability. The unintended consequence of that is it disincentivizes investors who are bringing housing units to market in the rental space, where especially now in the last number of months, we've seen substantial increases in overall rents throughout the city. So I guess the focus from my perspective and speaking to government should be really on addressing the supply concerns that exist, because to focus on how they're able to make ownership more affordable, they're going to make rental less affordable. So there has to be a balance to both sides of the housing space, because yes, some people will own, but many also need an ability to rent. And without affordable rental in the city, it creates a whole host of additional problems.
Toronto housing, Kevin, has been so hot for so many years without stopping. Do you think that the current market conditions might have the city of Toronto reconsidering some of these actions, or do you think it's pretty much damn the torpedoes straight ahead?
I certainly hope that the market change gives government pause in terms of looking at further suppressing demand. But more importantly, the one thing I hope doesn't happen is that all levels of government take their eyes off of the need for supply. You know, we've been beating the supply drum for years, and really until this year, haven't really got a lot of uptake with government in recognizing that we are in a substantial housing crisis based on the fact that we don't have enough actual housing in the Greater Toronto Area. And through the federal election and the provincial election, we have seen a substantial focus on concerns related to housing supply. And we sincerely hope that despite any change in market, that process continues. Because regardless of what the here and now is in terms of the supply-demand dynamic, as we've seen in other periods, you know, 2018, when we saw the market slow for a period, the ultimate factor that will change affordability is more housing.
Kevin, the problem with these development charges, though, is that they're a one-time revenue stream. And if they prevent the developer from taking action at all, it's just such a huge loss over time. I know, for example, and not related, but kind of along the same lines, when we were looking at a new place to live, Toronto wasn't even on the radar because of all the additional fees we'd be looking at.
Trump recognizes that development charges play an important role in funding growth-related capital costs. It's critically important for the city's residents, businesses, and the overall real estate market that development charges be as competitive as possible and that the short-term revenue generated by them be considered in the context of long-term city policy objectives such as intensification, employment growth, and affordable housing. You know, higher development charges could hurt Toronto's real estate market, but additionally, it could have the effect of taking development out of the pipeline. You know, many of these fees pass through as adjustments at the time of closing to buyers, and many more are taken on by the building industry at the time of construction and development. And with substantial increases, add to that the increased cost of land, the increase to construction costs that we've seen over the last couple of years. And one of the major potentials is that a number of these developments simply don't occur. And with the housing crunch that we currently have, we need every possible housing unit that is in process to proceed so we can start addressing some of these long-term supply considerations.
We've talked a lot this year about borrowing costs and raising interest rates. I'm just curious, do you see any signs that maybe homeowners are adapting to these new rising numbers?
Well, we certainly saw better overall activity in August, which certainly could be the sign of an adjustment to the changes in borrowing costs. I think as we go through the fall market, that'll become more evident, certainly. We have also seen some adjustments in rates that can be negotiated. So obviously, with the increases that we've seen, we had rates that were substantially over 5% as the sort of best negotiable rate in the market. And we have seen that come down over the last couple of weeks, certainly. So we're also seeing lenders adjusting to changes as well. And I think that will be a continued trend. We are waiting for the rate announcement, which will be coming this week. Mm-hmm. So that should also be an interesting factor in how overall rate changes play out in the market.
I'm joined this hour by TREB President Kevin Krieger. You know, whether you're selling or buying a home, undoubtedly that decision is going to lead to one of the largest financial transactions you're ever going to make. Get the advantage you need with a Toronto Regional Real Estate Board member for your real estate marketing facts and to search GTA listings updated in real time. Visit treb.ca, TREB.ca. I'm Ian Grant. Ask the Expert continues on News Talk 1010 Toronto. We are back. This is Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, joined this hour by Toronto Regional Real Estate Board President Kevin Krieger. TREB, serving more than 68,000 licensed real estate brokers and salespeople in the Greater Toronto area. Kevin, we talk an awful lot about purchasing and selling homes and properties. One of the areas that we haven't talked about, though, is TREB helping to represent the tenants out there. Can we talk a little bit about that area?
TREB is really the largest rental marketplace in the Greater Toronto area. So through our multiple listing service, we facilitate tens of thousands of rental transactions on behalf of not only landlords, but tenants as well. So in the same way that we help home buyers in their search, we provide a very similar level of service to tenants looking to search for rental property. So, you know, meeting with them, providing advice and guidance around not only the process and the Residential Tenancies Act, but looking at different communities and different characteristics they're looking for, and then pairing them with rental opportunities available across the GTA. Likewise, with landlords, we provide a full suite of services in terms of vetting potential tenants, obviously listing their property on the MLS system and marketing it in the same way that we would market a property for sale. But guiding both parties through that transaction is incredibly important. In the rental space, there are tons of challenges based on obviously the limited number of rentals available. But also for many people, especially those starting out, many newcomers to Canada, there's not a lot of familiarity with the Residential Tenancies Act, the requirements of the landlord, the responsibilities of the tenant, and certainly engaging a TREB real estate professional in that process can be of vital importance.
Kevin, TREB often highlights the benefits of home ownership, and I think we should take a little bit of time to investigate that further, since I'm not sure that people understand just how tangible the benefits are, not to mention far-reaching. One of the things that I remember reading from TREB was one family moving into a neighborhood can mean hundreds of thousands of dollars in that area for years. That strengthens the neighborhood, it strengthens the community, it benefits the home buyer. And as TREB has released in the past, you know, living in a stable environment, it can change, it literally could change generations of that family.
For sure. And it's something that we see in our daily practice. You know, having a sense of home and having control over that home is really key. So when you have the security of ownership, you have the ability to customize the space, obviously, to your own needs. You know sort of where you will be on a long-term basis. And it provides a lot of stability and security for sure. When you look at real estate, there's a lot of talk about, you know, real estate as an investment. And I think that certainly is part of the equation. You know, people are not purchasing homes like they do stock certificates, where basically they're trading them, you know, on an intraday basis or trading them in the short term. Real estate really is, for many, a very long-term investment. It is a great opportunity for certainly long-term equity growth. And, you know, we've seen that throughout generations. There are changes in the market, which we've seen over the last couple of months. And, you know, they certainly have their effect in the short term. But when we look at real estate, not only as a place to live and a sense of home, but we look at it as a hybrid investment that also provides all of those elements of, you know, security, a place to raise a family, continuity. For many of us now, our office and workplace as well. You know, the benefits are innumerable.
One of the other areas that we should highlight when we're talking about the values of a realtor, by the way, is, you know, when you do decide that you're looking to purchase a property, the realtor is more than willing to go over and work with you to make sure that you're on the right track, because there are risks that the realtor can discuss. I mean, there, we've talked before, the costly upfront expenses. There's the potential that the home could decrease in value. And one of the other areas I remember was having pretty much the majority of your net worth locked up in a house rather than cash. And these make for a great dining room table conversation to have with the realtor when you get into this process.
And you know, certainly as a buyer, the engagement of a real estate professional and having really in-depth conversation around, you know, short-term objectives, long-term objectives, you know, current employment realities, projected future employment opportunities, you know, all of those things certainly are key factors in decision making. And really, you know, the advice and guidance of a professional is hugely valuable. Likewise for seller clients, you know, over the last year, there have been a number of sellers that we've met with who are recognizing that their current home doesn't meet all of their needs. They don't feel that a substantial move down in the market size-wise is quite right for them either. And once we've sort of looked at the business case for the move, in addition to the personal reasons, we saw that in some cases, and it's a trend that we've been seeing for some time, you know, many years ago, people would move from a large home to a slightly smaller home, sometimes to an even smaller home than that, and then potentially to a condo or retirement home. We're seeing less of those transactions occurring, largely based on the transactional cost of, you know, land transfer taxes and all of the associated fees. And that's also a place where it's really important to engage a professional, look at what the personal motivations are for the move, if they're, you know, related to mobility, if they're related to lifestyle, if they're related to location. Those probably are more impactful. But if they're general in nature and they're also financial considerations, that's where really having an informed conversation with a real estate professional who can break down what that transaction looks like on a financial basis is also really, really important.
And also, and it kind of, you know, takes us back to what we started the show talking about, it's worth pointing out again how access to home ownership for as wide a population as possible helps the families. You know, they build equity over time, and that allows these families to save for future investments like education, health, or even their retirement.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, one of the challenges with the rental side, especially in a market where we don't have a lot of purpose-built rental, is, you know, let's say that I enter a tenancy this year and plan to stay there for some time. There are a number of reasons why that may not be an option for me longer term. If it's a condominium, for example, and it's individually owned, and the owner who's my landlord decides to sell, there are a number of instances where if the new buyer ultimately plans to move into the property, I then ultimately have to move once again. And when you look at the cost of moving, additionally, the increased cost of rent, when you sort of go from a property that you've been in that's increasing at a fairly low amount on an annual basis, and then you have to exit and go anew into the market, you may be at a much higher price level. So one of the challenges on the rental side is also continuity of costs, where to a large degree on the ownership side, you have generally a good sense of what your monthly costs are, some of which are fixed. There obviously are increases to, you know, taxes rarely decrease. But in a general sense, you have a lot more continuity from a cost perspective, especially if you've set aside money for future improvements and upgrades and repairs that are going to come up over time. So that's another key factor that people don't always think of. But for a very, very long-term renter, unless you're in a purpose-built rental property, there are certainly a number of potential pitfalls in looking at other rental options. So that's also where engaging a professional and understanding what your protections are as a tenant is really important for that tenant client.
Kevin, a fascinating hour. I really, as always, appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tribe members, professionals, connecting people, property, and communities. And as the collective voice for both its commercial and residential realtor members, you can get the advantage you need with a Toronto Regional Real Estate Board member. For your real estate market facts and to search GTA listings updated in real time, visit treb.ca, TREB.ca. I'm Ian Grant, and this has been Ask the Expert here on News Talk 1010 Toronto.